Tuesday, April 23rd, and we got one of our boys in the house today.
I said, and the first guy who goes deep, I want you to do me a favor. I want everyone going to home plate. I said, because I wanted to match their passion. I wanted to push it right back on. So when Trey hits the granny, if you watch that, the whole team went to home plate. Wow. And it was like kind of that
high school. It was like high school.
Yeah, and I kind of was like, I did it.
It makes me feel like I did it.
And I'm in love with this good life.
Good, man. I feel like I spent the last 2 hours with you. I watched you on Central today, so I was watching the whole show. I know everything you talked about.
This is
so
great
fun
show,
on that show, right? Those three of my best favorite friends.
Dude, Roflow is so freaking funny. I love him. He's so funny. And D-Ro is so funny. Like, almost feel like we weren't even on air. I was telling those guys walking off, I was like, thank you for making me laugh this morning. Like, I mean, just crying laughing. We were telling. And the great thing is, the three of us were telling stories off air, like when the commercial breaks, and dude, it's just absolute comedy.
Yeah, it's so funny. And thank goodness Lauren is thick skinned because she's like the little sister in that group.
Yeah.
But she's one of the few little sisters who can hang with you dudes. It's great.
Shoddy's the best. I told D Rowe, man, like also too, like when you're in the clubhouse, like when I was with the Yankees last year, like first off, MLB Network's on 24/7. And that's one of the shows. That's probably the show the players love the most is MLB Central.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's light. It's funny. They get to see some highlights, you know?
Yeah, no, it's great. Yeah, no, nobody takes himself too seriously. I'll tell you one guy who took himself a little seriously yesterday. And that was the home plate umpire in the Yankees game. Dude. Just go through your take on it. I have some questions for you that I don't think fans know after, but just give me your gut.
I mean, if you watched everything, you know, when he obviously gave a warning to Boone, and then, you know, obviously the camera was on Boone. It couldn't have been more perfect for Boone because it really gave him all the evidence they needed. He didn't say anything. You know, I think too, like at the end of the day, I think it's a bad game for Hunter Winterstadt. At the end of the day, players that back in the umpire, it's a bad game, dude. Like, at the end of the day, like, you can't do that. You can't toss the manager in the first inning not having the proof that you need, knowing that it's a guy above him. And then what I didn't like, Chinch, about the whole thing was after the game when he was interviewed and took zero accountability, took zero anything for the whole thing and said it was a player down the dugout, you know, which is not true. And, you know, like, you know, he says, well, I don't want to toss a player, so I toss Boone. I'm like, having the manager in the dugout is a big deal for the players. He's another player. He's the leader. You know, and so to do nothing and get tossed in the first inning, listen, it's a bad look for Hunter Winterstadt. But second off, the interview afterwards, even worse. Like,
absolutely.
Just watch the video, take some accountability, and everyone moves on. But don't say, hey, you're the, you know, don't try to be right in that situation.
Yeah, and no matter what you do, whether you're a little kid who got in trouble with your parents, whether you work at a company where you screwed something up, like the easiest way to blow that match out that you live by making a mistake is to go, I own it, my bad. It's over. Nobody can argue with you after you go, yeah, I got to take – if I were Wednesday, like, I got to take Boone out to dinner. I messed up.
Yeah.
It's over.
Yeah.
Then guess what? Then people like you and me are sitting here going, you know what? He owned up to it. It's over. We wouldn't even be really talking about it today.
We're only talking. I mean, I'm only talking about it, I think, because it's like you're trying to defend when you're wrong. It's just admit you're wrong. Everyone moves on.
Yeah. Now, can I ask
you? Forgiving society.
But you mentioned it, like how that screws up. Can you take us inside? Because I don't think I actually don't know. And I worked in baseball for 20 years. So the manager is done. Okay. What happens now in the dugout? So whoever takes over,
Yeah, Brad Ausmus takes over. Usually the bench coach takes over. So right. Ausmus takes over.
Right. So, but does I, you know, Booney's got all his little cards and all his notes and he's got a game plan. Does he hand that to
Yeah, he hands it to Ausmus. I mean, obviously Ausmus also been a manager for a long time, but he would hand it to Mendoza last year. It's just a, you know, dude, listen, baseball is an energy game. And you're in a day game, you know, you're kind of grinding to get to that day game. You got BP in the morning. Your manager gets tossed in the first. It's just a kind of thing. So, like, I'm not saying that's why the Yankees lost. They lost because they didn't hit.
Right.
But at the end of the day, like, if the manager doesn't have to get tossed just because – and here's the deal, too. You have to be able to control your emotions, dude.
Right.
It, as a player, as a man, all that, right? But as an umpire, you have, you know, the power that you have to, like, affect the game. You got to be able to control your emotions. You got to be able to, like, you know, to lock it in. So, you know, he initially was like, that's one more from you. Like, he almost like he was looking for a fight from Booney.
Right.
And then, you know, we always just say, you know, keep your ears out of the dugout. We yell at the umpire sometimes. Like, you know, I remember guys, you know, silly rabbit, tricks are for kids. You know, keep your ears out of here.
Yeah,
and I think Hunter Wendelstadt was looking for something. He was waiting to hear something. Not really locking in. Like, you got to lock in as an umpire too. Like, so there's got to be some accountability there. And at the end of the day, I'd consider it a bad game for Hunter Wendelstadt. Players have bad games, umpires, managers, but umpires have bad games too. At the end of the day, he made a mistake.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, we move on. And hopefully Hunter can too. Stop with that BS about what. All right. Anyways, there's one thing we didn't prep this, but I got to tell you, dude. Did you see Mason Miller facing the Yankees in the ninth yesterday?
Dude, he's a Pittsburgh kid, Bethel Park, dude, from the town next to me.
Bro, if I were the GM or team president of the A's, I would have walked into the Yankees GM suite, knocked on a door, and like mid-inning been like, what are you going to give me for this kid, Yankees?
Right.
Like, I'll give him to you before the game is over. I'll have him go into your dugout after the game and just go into your locker room. Dude, Mason Miller is going to be a game changer for somebody. Oh, look who
just walked in, baby. I didn't know if it was going to happen.
Oh, you can't see him because you got the little secret.
I didn't know if he was going to big move up.
You got me blurred.
Move up.
Dude, you got to take the blur off, I think.
All right, hang on a second. I'm just learning this stuff.
He's a ghost.
There he is, right there.
What's up, D-Ro?
He's got like 8 shows today, so I'm like,
got roped into an MLB now.
Yeah, so come in the mayor's office for like 10 minutes, and then.
All right, what are we talking about?
He did. We were just talking about, like, obviously we had to talk about Booney a little bit, but I was saying, like, what's your take on Hunter Wendelstadt? I'm saying that's a bad game for him. Like, you know, players have begged him, but Hunter Wendelstadt, it's a bad game.
I think what I'm realizing is that every generation's different, Chinch. And I feel like this generation of, like, metrically driven players wants the umpires to follow suit. The days of, like, building a rapport and having, like, their own interpretation of how to call a game or how they want to police the game, I don't think this generation wants to deal with that. And I feel like the older umpire is struggling in today's environment of that. And they want to still have their, you know, when we played, I'd come up to the plate and it was like a back and forth with a Jim Joyce or a Hunter Wendelstadt or whatever the case may be, you know, where you can kind of massage on balls and strikes and all these different things. I just think the younger generation of umpire has been trained a different way. And I feel like today's player is not trying to build a true relationship.
Yeah.
So it's like when Hunter Wendelstadt says, like, say one more word, and those days are kind of.
Yeah, know, right. I think that's good.
We were talking about it the other day about, like, remember back in the day when you were in Little League through high school, through college, right? You take that pitch and you know it's an inch and a half off the plate. You go back to the dugout. What did your coach say? It's too close to take. Nowadays, to your point, I think guys are like, no, I know that's a ball. I am too disciplined. I'm not supposed to swing at that. You're human. I'm human. But no, you're wrong. I'm not swinging. And that's where a lot of these arguments come. I agree with your point there.
I was sitting 10 rows
behind. Oh, that's right. D-Rose,
I went to the game yesterday. I was sitting 10 rows behind. It's like, I understood Booney's frustration. He thought Ruiz full swung, so he wanted to
check. It looked like he did.
Honestly. He wanted to check,
yeah.
First off. Then Hunter, he could have checked it himself. I mean, that's my other thing. Every once in a while, they'll call it themselves. Then we get, you know, then they'll throw it down for a check. That was what, for me, was the biggest thing. But Booney's built this reputation. It's almost like some of these umpires are like, whatever he was going to hear, he was going to assume it was Booney.
Yeah, I agree. Because, to the umpires, Booney is on those guys.
Yeah.
And so I think there is like, hey, listen, don't. And Hunter Wendelstadt obviously is a veteran umpire, maybe trying to show the younger umps, like, this, you got to take care of this kind of thing. But that could be a disconnect too. But no doubt, I felt like he was ready to go. Like Hunter Wendelstadt was waiting for something, somebody to say something. And maybe it was D. Rowe talking trash. And he'll never win at the game.
I promise it was.
Dude, did you stay the whole game?
Still in a dog.
Real nice.
Nice. Did you stay through the ninth? Because we were just talking about Mason Miller. Dude, that kid throws 195 miles per hour.
We were just talking about it on the show. No, you don't have a chance unless he hangs the slider. He was sitting 101, yeah, 102. Yeah. He could have told you a heater was coming. There was nothing you could do to get to it. It's an unbelievable story if you dive in. He was like a Gardner Webb.
Yeah, he's from Bethel Park. He's from Pittsburgh, the town next to me.
I don't want to overspeak. I think he was diagnosed with like diabetes and didn't know he had it. And then once he got on the medication, then everything started to kind of like jumpstart his career.
I think he was at a Division III school to start and then transferred to Gardner Webb with a man, Jim Chester. Next thing you know, he's throwing a 103.
I think the interesting thing about Mason Miller is in today's game of like, you know, elite stuff and bullpen stuff, he's only got like half a year in the big leagues. But if I'm envisioning what Oakland's trying to do, right, they have to set themselves up for 2028 when they go into Vegas. I don't think they're going to be relevant in the next 3 years before that happens. He's a piece at my.
Do you think he can stay, or you think they're going to
trade him? I think you should trade him for the next superstar position player.
Oakland should have just.
Where's your Gunnar Henderson?
Right.
Where is he? Where's your Tatis for James Shields?
I said GM should have just walked in during that inning to Cashman and been like,
Spencer Jones,
I'll put him right in your locker room right after this game. Yeah, give me Spencer Jones.
I'm telling you, you want him coming out of the back end of a bullpen?
Oh my gosh,
with some like loud music, Yankee Stadium, play some
that would be incredible.
Play home
because an arm like that brings the crowd. You know, especially in New York.
You can't physically get to it.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I love what you said. You showed Volpe's at bat earlier, right? And you were like, Volpe, that's not even struggling. Like, he had zero chance of getting hit off him yesterday. It's unbelievable.
Early in the season, Case knows this, but you look at the Yankees lineup. I think they're going to be there when the dust settles. Like, I think they're a really good team. Hopefully, Gerrit Cole comes back. Their lineup's completely different.
LeMahieu's coming back.
LeMahieu. They're struggling. Judge is struggling up and down the lineup. Outside of Volpe and Soto, no one's really hitting. And Sears was really.
Cabrera's been all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been good.
Glaber. The DJ comes back and goes into that.
Yeah, what happens,
Glaber's a major funk. Major.
Yeah, Glaber, that's he'll get it going. But that's like free agent year.
Right. Maybe trying to do too much.
Maybe a little too much early.
Exactly.
All right, Casey.
We got D. Rowe here. We had Sean Bion, which was awesome, and we showed a clip on MLB Central when he was talking to Chipper Jones before the game, and he said, this is when Chipper was playing, and Boog was up in the booth, and he was doing like ESPN or something. He said, hey, you know, he's like, it looks like you're overly aggressive on the first pitch, right? You're overly aggressive on the first pitch, and. So, you know, Chipper says whatever he says. So the first at bat, Chipper gets up there. Tim Stauffer, University of Richmond, shout out, spinning webs nationwide back in the day. Timmy Stauffer gets up there, first pitch, throws him a 91-mile-an-hour two-seamer right down the middle to Chipper, and he takes it, right? And then he takes it, turns up to Boog Shambi, who's up in the booth. He's like, seriously? You know, and we just thought it was so cool. But I want to get into Chipper Jones a little bit while having you, like,
just,
just talking about what was he like as a teammate? And, you know, and as a hitter, I mean, I felt like he was so natural. Is that true?
I got the chance to play with Pujols. I got a chance to play with, studs up and down.
Yeah.
He was a
stud.
And he wasn't as good a hitter as Albert if you looked like, you know, just straight offensive profile. But I just think Chipper was like the one superstar that, like, he dominated an entire region. He didn't dominate Georgia. Right. The whole Southeast was wearing high socks and mock neck. I give it a big league mock neck. 100 degrees Turner Field mock neck. It was. I said, hey, yeah, how many coaches have we had since Little League? It seems like a billion. But there's like three or four people that can touch your life and really change the direction of your career. And I felt like he was one of those guys for me. He took a liking to me early. I mean, I basically caddied for him. Basically, get me a drink, get me a sandwich, give me anything, and I'll take you to lunch and dinner and teach you how to hit. And that's what he did. Like, he took me in a video room and took the time to show me how to game plan. Like, truly, wow. He game planned every...
Did he really?
Oh, he had all the answers to the test before he went out. He knew what that pitcher was going to do. He would watch their last five starts. He would watch what they threw with runners in scoring position. He would look at comps to how he thought he would be pitched in certain situations. And he was doing, like, you know, an analytic equation in his head of a process of eliminating pitches. He called me in Cincinnati my rookie year, 98, 99. And just, you know, Tripper's brutal truth guy. He's like, what are you doing? I was like laying in my bed 11, you know, stock, watching ESPN. It's 48 degrees in my hotel room. And he goes, let's go to the stadium. I want to teach you how to hit. You're not good enough.
Oh, are you serious?
And we went, like, he showed me a routine of how to be a big leaguer.
Wow.
That's what, and I, uber confident, like, yeah, I'm a huge, he's.
He was one of those guys, he'd come to first, and obviously, one thing Chipper, when he'd come up with the game on the line, I was like, we're in trouble.
Oh,
like, it was incredible, especially in Atlanta. In Atlanta, game on the line, I'm like, this guy's going to hit a rock in the gap.
Jeter always used to say the unprepared are the nervous ones.
Right.
He was never unprepared.
Right.
He kind of knew what the guy wanted to do against him. He knew they didn't want to miss over the heart of the plate. He knew he was going to potentially sit spin in certain counts. Like, he was a savant, like Boog said.
Yeah.
But him. Made a lot of grown men cry over here on Long Island over the years. I'll tell you that right now. Freaking Mets, dude. He destroyed the Mets. Isn't his are his kids named after like Shea Stadium or something like that?
Yeah, his one son is named Shea.
That's so good.
Good luck and crushed him so much.
Yeah.
Dude, we were talking, D-Row and I were talking on the show today too about the NL Central. Like, who do you think is the best? I know we were saying they're all kind of lumped together, but who do you think is the best team in that Central? Like, that's after 162, you're like, oh.
I think you gotta prove it, right? Like, you'd love to say Cincinnati's super talented, but I'd like to see them. There's no track record of them being able to get it done and getting into the postseason. So you lean towards St. Louis being able to figure this out at some point. But man, it just doesn't seem like it wants to come together for whatever reason. In my opinion, I don't know if it's a mishmash of really great players that don't know their roles and where they kind of fill in. I'd love to see Ollie Marmol, instead of you telling me you got five great outfielders, pick three.
Right, right.
I always felt the best teams knew their roles. The 25, 26 guys all knew when they drove to the park how they added value to the roster.
Yeah.
Right? They knew. Like, I knew at different points in my career what I was being paid to do. Whether it was caddy and be a sack bunt, move a runner, go get a turkey sandwich and some Reese's Cups, or I had to drop three ribbies. Like, it changed from team to team, year to year.
Right, right, right.
And I just feel like when I watch St. Louis, there's a lot of guys on that roster that don't know who they are, what's expected. Nolan Gorman, I think, is one of the best young hitters in the game. I mean, he's like 6'2", 230 trying to play second base.
Right.
Like, put Brendan Donovan there and end the drama and just leave him there. Jordan Walker, can he play outfield? Is he a DH? I don't know, but I know he mashes. Why is he struggling all the time?
Right. Yeah.
I just feel like they're kind of in their head of how they stay in the lineup on a daily basis.
Right, and there's nothing worse about being a young player throwing an 0-for-4 out there and like, you're not in the lineup tomorrow. So then when you get in the lineup, you're like, I got to get a hit.
Yeah.
Do it. Then that's a guaranteed 0-for-4 when you start getting that. And it just spirals out of control. I remember my rookie year when I came back from an eye injury, I was kind of scuffling. And I all I could think about was that. Oh, my God, when's Jack McKeon going to take me out of the lineup? He came up to me one day, grabbed me, said, hey, listen, just want you to let you know, you can hit. You've always hit. He said, you're going to hit third. You're not coming out of the lineup. You're playing every day. I don't care. He goes, yeah, he goes, I don't care if you hit 200 the rest of the year. I was like, you don't? Oh, my God.
Next, I do.
I was like, I think.
I had it the other way. I was absolutely mutilating baseball in like 2003 with the Braves. Thought I was the next coming, like next shortstop, like 1901. And Bobby Cox basically called me in the office and he goes, I don't think you can play every day.
What?
Oh, yeah.
You're like, what are you?
They traded for Ray Sanchez. I forget the year.
You're like, are you watching what I'm watching?
He's like, I don't think it profiles over 162. And I'm not putting a rookie at shortstop, three Hall of Famers, and going into the postseason. I was like, well,
how do I ever
change your mind? And it was like, nah, you're really not gonna.
What?
I'm like, I gotta get out of here.
Texas. Here I come. Rudy Jaramillo.
Hey, Texas. Take your huddled masses. Here I come, baby. I'm yours. Let's figure it out.
By the way, D-Rod, I've been watching the show. First of all, it's my favorite show on the network. I love all you guys. But, dude, what'd you do, the Ozempic or something? You were shredded this year, bro.
You know,
shredded.
I've always been shredded. No,
I mean you streamlined a little bit. Really,
keep it real with two things, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Number one, I made a decision in my life that New Year's Eve I was going to start working out harder because I didn't think that. It was matching how I felt.
Right, I thought
I looked decent, but I didn't feel decent.
Yeah, you need your energy going.
I started getting back on squats and deadlifts and like actually going old school and working out harder. I felt better.
Turns out it works when you do that.
Yeah, and I quit chewing tobacco, which threw me into a spiral of withdrawal hell.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And most people gain weight. I was like dripping sweat.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
How long did it take you to get through that?
I think about it every day. I want to go to a gas
station.
Oh my God.
Turns out
it's 3 months.
Mess.
It's terrible.
So yeah, so like it took some weight off me just like literally sweating through the night. And then I didn't put it back on. It's all, you know what it is? I'm never a big like throughout the day crushing food.
Yeah.
I don't. But late night, I would find myself
dabbling.
So I've stopped that, and for the most part, I've been all right.
So if anyone out there is dipping, you can lose weight if you stop.
Where are you going to gain 30 pounds?
Where are you going to gain? You could go either way, but if you're doing squats, deadlifts, and benching.
Yeah, if you're mentally weak like that, you'll sweat through the night.
It's pluses and minuses. You'll also keep your bottom.
Know where I knew this? Pinch, not to cut you. WBC, managing that team. I was the only one carrying a can of chewing tobacco.
Yeah,
the only one. Gets, and it right? kind of like completely woke me up. I'm like, this generation is not doing that. And I'm like, man, it's time. Yeah, like, get rid of that.
That's great. I get it.
Hey,
go ahead, go.
So I got, well, this is the last question we're going to ask D-Row because I told him 10 minutes. And
I got to do MLB
yeah.
now.
So while we have you, because we had you on last time, you know, months ago, but, you know, not since you did the WBC. Tell us about that and what that was like. What did you learn? What memories do you still have about it?
What did I learn?
What players?
I learned a million things. No.
Tell me about the Venezuela game.
Oh, my God.
Let's go to the Venezuela game where Trey Turner hit one of the greatest.
Great to have a – yeah, that was one of the highlights of my career. I had played, long story short, I had played in Venezuela in 1999 and absolutely loved it.
Really?
Loved it. Bobby Abreu, Omar Dahl, the list goes on. Alex Gonzalez, shortstop of the Marlins, wow. All on my team and all took care of me. And I really enjoyed that Venezuelan flair of baseball. Caracas Magallanes
passion
is a postseason game.
Is it really?
No doubt. Like,
even in winter ball.
Postseason. In energy.
In winter ball.
Yes.
Well, I got the chills.
Electric energy.
Every night.
Certain games, but okay. Caracas Magallanes games were off the charts. Caracas, so I knew we were going to be a visitor in
Miami, dude. They were a visitor.
I just felt it, right? So I called a quick meeting in the hitter's cage and I just said, that I was like, listen, I've been around the Venezuelan tradition. They're going to be in our face. There's a lot of respect there, but they're going to be in our face to turn this crowd completely against us. And we're the visitor tonight. I said, we are facing Martin Perez. Take Venezuela off his uniform. You've all faced him.
Right.
He's your nice lefty.
Right.
We should be able to grab barrels off. That's what I was thinking. I said, and the first guy who goes deep, I want you to do me a favor. I want everyone going to home plate. I said, because I wanted to match their like passion. Wanted to push it right back on them. So when Trey hits the granny, if you watch that, the whole team went to home plate.
Wow.
And it was like kind of that
high school. It was like high school.
Yeah, and I kind of was like,
it makes me feel like I did.
That's so great.
Gary Manuel, bench coach, was out there. Like, it changed. Like, the relationships with the guys. I just thought it was a great moment. So, yeah, one of the coolest moments of my life. Getting to know the superstars in the game. Underneath the tunnel case. We think we know doing it. You don't know until you're with them on a daily basis. And the one thing I'll say about managing, I learned I could do it, number one, Chinch, but I learned that it happens fast. You need a good coaching staff behind you. You need your
boys. Who were your coaches? Brian McCann.
Jerry Manuel was the bench coach. Andy Pettit, who's ride or die for life, was the pitching coach. Ken Griffey Jr. was the hitting coach.
Wow. And those guys respected him, right, Junior? Cool. I'm saying, hey, they're the best players in the game.
We were fanboy. It took a minute for us not to like trade him.
And he was in bombs and BP, right? He was in bombs and BP in front of the guys. That was unbelievable.
I brought two of my boys that I know would take a bullet for me, Mikey Young and Brian McCann.
Two of the greatest players.
They're not going to let me die. Like, if I die, they die, right? I needed to know that. So, like, I turn around and look at Mac, and he was. Go get him.
Right, good call.
Just like in the championship game, we stayed up till 4 a.m. because the pitching, we were trying to honor teams, keep guys healthy, trying to piece it together. Japan was strong. I was like, you got Darvish pitching the eighth, and I had to send Nick Martinez back to the Padres because I wasn't using him enough. I'm like, hey, what is this garbage?
What are we, nuts?
So there was kind of a massage. I would have loved Merrill Kelly to go 6 shutout. I love him. He's an awesome cat. But I just said, you know, if it gets squirrely, I'm going to start just bringing out this bullpen. Pettit kind of grabbed me when I went to get him in the second. He's like, let him have this. I go, no. I've been up all night.
Hey, like, I'm stressed to the gills. I'm thinking about stopping tobacco.
If I'm going down. Hey, Looper. I played with him in Toronto. So, it was great, Chinch.
That was the greatest week we've had on the show every day. That was one of the most exciting couple weeks of baseball I've ever seen.
You got to figure out a way.
How can we get the U.S. to get more pitching?
You got to figure out a way to. I don't know what the answer is, but every great player should be playing. And I understand why they don't. I mean, I called everybody. I called DeGrom. I called Verlander. I called Scherzer. We talked to them all. Kershaw. We all wanted them to know if you want to do it.
Yeah.
I understand why they don't. I understand why they're.
Do you think as it gets more popular and powerful, then he's going to, all right, I'm in.
They got to.
Good experience.
There's got to be something like we were talking about, do you have line shifts of pitchers, full play pitchers and bracket play pitchers? But then I was always trying to create team.
Right. So then those guys are in and out. Yeah.
And then it's kind of get weird gun for hire type stuff. And I don't know if that plays.
Yeah. Wow.
So I think there's a lot to dive in.
I'm going to let you go because you got to go MLB. Yeah, yeah. Go.
Hey, thanks, man.
Hey, would you give Soto a mega contract?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. You have to. He does more than just what he's doing on a field. He's changed everybody's at bats. Everybody in the lineup.
Do you Brian, guys? He's gonna
say no.
He's gonna say no. What? So we gotta get it. We gotta look at it.
Real quick. Nuts? All right.
Oh. All right. Okay, you're the best. Thank you. Love you, buddy. Thanks again for stopping.
Yeah, it's a great show. I figured you could just join one more show again. Love you, brother. You're the best. You're the best.
There's nobody better. Nobody.
Or the greatest people, dude.
People.
If you want to have.
Serious.
If you want to have a great time and you want to laugh, you got D-Row, sit him next to you. You know what I mean? That was incredible. So
yeah, and if you want to talk about manager, dude, he is the perfect combination of a personality to be a manager because yes, he can make you laugh your ass off.
No.
But if he doesn't agree with something you say, he has a way of telling you that he's unhappy with something. I'm not saying being unhappy as friends or whatever, like, I don't like doing it this way. I think it should be done that way. He's a great guy.
Yeah, he'll let you know, and he's going to be a manager one day, no doubt about it. And Brady Singer came in a couple weeks ago into MLB Central, and he was on that team. I said, "Hey, what was D-Row like?" He was like, "The best." Oh my god, he wanted to say he could have talked about D-Row for us. That was kind of cool. Only together for a few weeks, but they're like, "This guy's the best." So he is the best, man. That was great. I was walking back from the show. I was like, hey, come join me and Chink. I'm
mayor. So like, great call.
Stop in, so that's great, dude.
Grateful.
All right, brother.
Well, get out of here. You're going to Yankee Stadium, man, right?
Yeah, I'm heading over to Yankee Stadium to see the boys today. See Boone and the boys. And I'm really looking forward to seeing those guys, man. Judgy and Volpe and all those guys, man.
Try to sneak in another handful of those, like those thin, like.
Yeah, let me see if I can. Let me see if Rob Cacuzzi can get me some swag.
Yeah, dude. Nice.
Better than when you're in the dugout swag. The player swag is always different than the team store.
Bro, no, I'll tell you. When my brother moved home, I was wearing that. You gave me one of those, like, those
tight fit.
Like,
yeah.
What do you think? Yeah. My brother's like, where'd you get that? And I go, this is from the team, bro. This
right,
is
it's the, different.
You don't buy the sound line. I love it. Dude, I wear it all the time. It's amazing.
So good, dude. So good. All right, bro. Hey, Chichi, love you, man. And everyone out there, thanks for listening. Subscribe, download. We're getting that jersey. We got to get to 4,000 subscribers. Let's move the needle. All right, man. Hope you guys enjoyed D-Row today. D-Row, thanks for stopping by, bro.
Yeah.
See you tomorrow, man. See you tomorrow.